Hello everybody, this week's Parsha is Parsha Shoftim, and the Parsha begins with the mitzvah, the commandment, Shoftim v'shoytrim titein lecha b'chol sharecha. Klal Yisrael is being commanded to put in every single city, Shoftim, judges, v'shoytrim, and those who enforce the law, like mishtara, like the police. Every single city has to have law and order. But the Mefarshim want to know, what's this expression of titein lecha, place for yourself, in singular? Should we titnu lechem? You should put for all of you. What's the singular? Says the Shalah HaKadosh that in Sefer HaYetzirah, very Kabbalistic work, it says there that every person has seven gates. A person has seven different portals, so to speak, ways of interacting with the outside world. A gate always symbolizes you have a wall, and the gate is where you can come in and come out from the city. So gates are the ways that the person's internal, the person's who he is inside, can interact with the world around him. A person has two eyes, a person has two ears, two nostrils, and a mouth. Seven different gates from which a person interacts with the world around him. He takes in, he puts out. Hopefully he takes in more than he puts out. But a person has to have, says the Pasuk, Shoftim v'shoytrim. A person has to have judges, and he has to have shaitrim, those who enforce the law, at every single one of his gates. What does that mean, says Shalah HaKadosh? It means, like Shlomo HaMelech tells us in the beginning of Sefer Mishlei, Ladas Chachma Musar. Shlomo HaMelech tells us a person has to have two components. He has to have Chachma, he has to have wisdom. He has to know what's right and what's wrong. He has to spend the time to think things through and to properly understand what's the correct path. What is it that I want to take in from the world? What should I be eating? What should I not be eating? What should I put out in the world? What should I be saying? What should I not be saying? But then it's not enough. You also have to have shaitrim. You have to have those who enforce the law. That's the musr. The musr is when a person takes that chachma that he has and he enforces it. He solidifies it by himself. He makes sure that he sticks to what he knows to be correct. And that's what the Pasuk is telling us. It's not enough that Klal Yisrael as a whole should have judges and should have shaitrim enforcers in their cities. Every single Jew has to have that same process with his own interactions. At every single one of his gates, at every single other point of his interactions, he has to have a shofet, he has to have someone there deciding what's right and what's wrong, and that's his mind. And his shaitrim, his musar, his heart has to be enforced to follow through what he knows to be correct and to make sure he sticks to his morals. The pasuk continues, and it warns those judges that they cannot be satemish, but they can't bend the law. Lesakir panim, they can't show favoritism. Velesikhu sheichad, they can't take bribery. Because all these things, yasheichad ya'avar enei chachamim. Because when a judge takes a bribe, his eyes are blinded. V'yisalif divrei tzadikim, and perverts the words of the righteous. And all the Balei Musar teach us that bribery doesn't have to always necessarily be money. It can be any kind of personal bias. When a person has to make a decision about what to do in their life, he always has to think and double check himself that he's not being bribed, that he's not being biased to do something because of his own personal, what we call negius, his own personal interests. I saw a very powerful story in the biography about Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. So they were discussing, there are different great people he met when he was a bachur, when he was a young man learning in Europe. And one of them was Rav Baruch Bar Leibowitz, the famous Rosh Yeshiva of Kamenetz, one of the founders, so to speak, of the style of learning that we have in the yeshivas nowadays, of deep, deep lumdus. But they were bringing out in that story that Rav Baruch Bar, even though he wasn't known as to being one of the Balei Musar, but he definitely exemplified the Musar movement. And they brought a story there. There was a fellow who lives in Baltimore, at least when the book was written, I don't think he's alive anymore, and he was a student of Rav Baruch Bar Leibowitz. And he said over a story how Rav Baruch Bar one time called him into his office, him and two other guys, and he asked them to do him a favor. Because what had happened was that a couple months before, one of the top bachurim in the yeshiva had gotten engaged to Rav Baruch Bar's daughter. And, you know, everyone was very excited. He's a great boy. He was engaged to Rosh Yeshiva's daughter. But the minig was, in those days in Europe, that, you know, it's not appropriate always for the chasen kala, if the chasen kala live in the same city, they would say that the boy who's, you know, while he's engaged, he should go learn in a different place. He shouldn't stick around in the town where the girl is during the engagement period. Then he'll come back for the chasen and then he'll live in the town. So this bachur from Yeshiva and Kamenetz was sent to go live in a different town and learn in a different yeshiva for a couple of months till the chasana, and then he would come back and get married. And sure enough, he was in the other town. He was truly a very, very good boy. And somebody basically mentioned, but there was a very wealthy person in that city who also had a daughter who needed a shidduch. And basically, they convinced this boy to go for this wealthy girl and to break his shidduch with her Baruch Ber's daughter. So, sure enough, obviously, Baruch Ber was very, very hurt and he felt horrible. His daughter, she has her engagement broken. She was so excited to be a kala. But the issue was, you see, that this boy did learn in Yeshiva of Kamenetz. And if he wants to get properly, you know, engaged to this new girl who's very wealthy, he needs a letter saying how great he is for his new potential father-in-law. So he sent Baruch Ber a request to write him a letter, you know, speaking out his virtues to his potential new father-in-law. So Baruch Ber called in these boys, because Baruch Ber had spent a lot of time writing this letter, and he was afraid, though, that he wouldn't write it properly because of all the hurt and all the pain he was suffering about what this guy did to him. He was scared he wouldn't be able to write the letter correctly. So he asked these three boys to be a Beis Din to judge that his letter that he had written was truly fitting for this boy and it wasn't kind of affected by his own personal hurt. And this man from Baltimore, this Talmud Rav Baruch Ber, said he was sitting there and he was reading the letter and he was literally crying. How could his Rosh Yeshiva, his Rebbe, be such a tzaddik that to reach such a madriga? The letter he said was above and beyond. It said how amazing this boy was. There was no hints of any kind of, so to speak, hurt or pain that Baruch Ber felt. But the message, so to speak, obviously on a very high level here, but at least something we could relate to, is this idea that Baruch Ber was always nervous that he's not taking in his own personal, so to speak, negias, his own personal issues and problems into making a judgment about somebody else and deciding on how to properly act in regards to other people. The parsha continues, and Klal Yisrael is forbidden of making a mizbeach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "Lesakim lachom atseva." Don't make a mizbeach, an altar, out of one solid stone. Asher soneh Hashem lekach, because Hashem hates a solid stone. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants our mizbeach, our altars, had to be made from a bunch of stones put together. And Rashi ask the obvious question, that we find that Yaakov Avinu, he made a matzeva, and the Avos in general, they always used a matzeva, a solid stone, as an altar. They didn't build them out of separate stones. So why all of a sudden do we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu hates them? So I saw an interesting pshat from the Drash Moshe, from Moshe Feinstein. He says as follows. He says, Yaakov Avinu made a matzeva twice, it says. He made once when he made an altar for the bringing of carbon to Hashem, and it says he made another time. When he buries Rachel, it says he made a matzeva al kivra. He made a solid stone, so to speak, a monument upon her grave. And that's actually something we still do today. We still make a solid stone upon a person's, to mark a person's grave. And he says the idea is as follows. There's a fundamental difference between a solid stone and a pile of stone. You see, because a pile of stone is never really finished. You can always add another rock. There's no clear defining point when it's done. A solid stone, it is what it is. It may be big, it may be small, but ultimately, it's defined. This is the rock. You see, before HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Klal Yisrael the Torah, definition of a person's service to Hashem, there was no obligation that it had to be endless. A person wasn't obligated. There was no mitzvahs yet. So there could be a point when a person could say, okay, this is my service to Hashem. The Avos lived in an era when there was no obligation yet to serve Hashem. There was no mitzvahs yet. So whatever they did, okay, that could be it. There's no obligation to keep it growing. Whereas once we're given the Torah, once we're commanded to constantly do more and more mitzvahs, and as long as we're alive, we have to keep adding, we're no longer allowed to make our service of Hashem out of an altar, out of a solid stone, because we're never done. There always has to be room to keep adding. We always have to keep growing. We're never finished. Only when a person finally leaves this world, when a person is buried, then we can take a solid stone and say, this is what he accomplished. This is what they brought into this world. And we can take a solid stone as a matzeva. But while a person is alive, there constantly has to be growth. And I heard a nice, so to speak, addition to this point, which is it could be that's why the minig is to add a stone. People put stones on top of a grave. So the simple pshat why they do it is to show that someone's visiting, to show the grave is not neglected. But the idea is that even after the person has died, since they left over, descendants and loved ones and people who they've affected, who care about them and who try to grow and follow in their ways, even their matseva, even that solid stone they left behind, it's still growing. There's still rocks being added on top. The parasha continues in Perek Yitzayim Pasuk Yechas. It talks about the halachos of a king of Klal Yisrael. And Torah tells us that the king has to write, v'kasav lo yesh mishnah ha-Torah hazayis. He has to write himself a copy of a Torah, al sefer, and he has to keep it with him. Now the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Chaval of Darshans, from the expression of mishnah ha-Torah. What's this idea of a mishnah Torah? And the Gemara Darshans that it means he has to have two sefer Torahs. It's not enough that he has one. Every Jew has to have a sefer Torah. The king has to have two. And the Gemara says, what's the two? One of them he keeps with him constantly. Wherever he goes, wherever he is, he has a small sefer Torah with him. He's constantly learning from it and constantly reading from it. And he has another one, says the Gemara, which he keeps in Beis Genazov, in his storage, kind of where he keeps all his treasures. He has to keep it kind of locked away back there at home. And the question is, obviously, what's the point of that sefer Torah left at home? The one he has with him, that makes sense. He's constantly learning from it. What's the point of having a sefer Torah locked away in the treasure house? I heard a pshat once, beautiful idea, that a king, he's somebody whose his job is to enforce law and order, his job is to lead the nation, and as we know and as history has proven, that leading Klal Yisrael through different times, it's complicated. And there's lots of times where the king has to do stuff, which generally speaking is not a good idea, but because of the situation, because of the times, it calls for a certain, so to speak, there are certain times for Hashem's sake we have to, so to speak, tweak things and bend things a little bit. There's a concept of shasat chak, that things have to be pushed a certain way. We have to make a certain emphasis more on one thing or the other. The most famous example is obviously there was always a prohibition to write down the oral Torah, the Torah Shebaal Peh. But Yehuda HaNasi decided at a certain point the gullahs got too strong. And for now, for the time being, we have to write down the oral law because otherwise, it's going to be completely forgotten. But of course, it was seen as this is not the ideal. This is something that has to be done because the time calls for it. Therefore, since a king is constantly in that struggle, he's constantly put in situations where he has to, so to speak, deal with things that are not ideal. The issue is that sometimes a person can spend so much time in non-ideal situations that he can begin to think that that's okay, that's the norm, that is the ideal. Therefore, he always has to have that gold standard. He always has to have that Sefer Torah back in the storage house, in that treasure chest, the one that's not touched, the one that's pristine, the one to measure back to and say, no, you know, this was something I only did because I was in a tough situation, but the ideal is still this, to help him recalibrate and to figure out what's right. That's what the role of that Sefer Torah that's in the Beis Genazov, that Sefer Torah that was left, so to speak, back in the treasure house, was meant there to show the king, whenever he had a doubt, what the true ideal was, what's proper, what's supposed to be, and what are we striving for. So I want to end off with one last vart. It says in the end of the parasha, in Perek Chaf Pasuk Gimel, that when Klal Yisrael goes to war, the Kohen HaMashuach LaMacham, the Kohen is anointed for war, he comes in front of them, and he gives them a whole speech. He says who has to go back from the war, who can go to war. And he says to Klal Yisrael, V'Omer Aleihem, he should say to them, Shema Yisrael, hear Klal Yisrael, Atem Krevim Hayom LaMacham Aleveichem, you're coming today to fight your enemies. Al Yerach Levavchem, don't let your hearts be faint. Al Tiru, don't fear. Al Techbuzu, don't tremble. Al Tarzu Ipneim, nor don't be terrified because of them. And Rashi asks, brings a famous Gemara in Saita. The Gemara wants to know, what's these four different languages of don't be afraid? Well, just say, don't be afraid. What's the four different expressions over here? And the Gemara says that these are referring to four different tactics that the enemy tends to do in battle. There's four different fear tactics the enemy tends to use. They bang their shields, they stomp their feet, they blow horns, they have their horses neigh. And therefore, because of these four different tactics, the idea that Torah tells us is that there's four different languages, don't be afraid. And the Baal HaMusar explain what the deeper idea of the Gemara is that we're not just referring to a regular battle when Klal Yisrael goes to war. This is every single day and every single phase in life. A person battles his Yetzer Hara. And every single stage in life and every single almost day, there's different challenges. the thing that you were fighting one day is not the thing you're fighting the next. And every different day, in every different situation, brings a new Yetzirah, a new enemy, and a new thing that you could be afraid to fight against. And the Torah is telling you that each one, you have to hold yourself back and not be afraid. But I heard a very, very interesting point from Ephraim Waxman. He said that if you look at all these four things that the Torah is mentioning here, they all have one thing in common. These aren't real dangers. These are fear tactics. These are, so to speak, psychological weapons that the enemy uses to make you afraid. And he said the Torah is teaching that's always how the Yetzirah fights. The Yetzirah always fights. He always tries to scare you. He makes noise. He makes a lot of chaos. He tries to overwhelm you. There's never, so to speak, attacking you with anything real. And if you can hold your ground, if you can call his bluff, and you take it day by day, then as each challenge comes up, and a person just sticks to his ground and he keeps pushing, a person will make it through. And that's the lesson the parsha is teaching us, is that in every stage, in every place, as long as a person controls himself and doesn't get afraid and doesn't get overwhelmed, he'll be able to push through and he'll be zeichem v'tishem to truly conquer that enemy and come out on top. We should all have a wonderful Shabbos.